Mike Bisaglia here from SeavillePodcast.com. You are about to listen to Runcast, a weekly form of everything running, with your host, Mark Lorenzoni, a community running expert who has been directing hundreds of area for nonprofit foot races and coaching thousands of runners for the past 30 years.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Runcast. A fair amount to talk about. Appreciate you listening in. Kind of a exciting weekend out of nowhere, but mid-February, usually kind of a quieter time, a cold time, but things are really heating up, actually, in the UVA track program. Coach Fetzer and his two new assistants, Watson and Morgan, they've only been here a little over a month, and already we're seeing a serious impact on the team of their influence. Of course, all Jason Vigilante's recruits and Jason Vigilante's staff leading up to that point, you got to give some credit. But at this point, the kids, the athletes are loving the new coaches, and they seem to be responding. So why don't we start with that, and then we'll come over to the Valentine's 5K, a little race. Normally, over the past few years, we've had attendance issues with it, dipped from 300 to 250, down below 200. And we rocketed up over the 300 mark this year, and we've got a lot of exciting things that happened on out there at Old Trail and Crozet. But we'll start with the UVA Tracksters. They were all over the country, Mike. They were down in Fayetteville for the Tyson Invitational. They were out at the Husky Invitational, Washington State, and some of the kids were down in Liberty. Fetzer's got them spread out all over the place, and pretty impressive performances in all of the locations. I think the Blue and Orange is, you know, we're making some noise. And the guy making the biggest noise is the Rocket, Marcus Robinson, who is the cream of the crop in the country in the triple jump. Set the ACC indoor record over the weekend, broke his own record, 54 feet, 6 3/4 inches at the Tyson Invitational. I mean, this guy's the real deal. He's ranked number one in the United States, rightfully so, with that jump. And I was saying to someone the other day, just imagine, I was talking to Brad on the radio yesterday, and I said, imagine, pace off this building, the hallway,
right,
and imagine jumping that far pretty much. I mean, 54 feet is a long, long way to even pace off, to think about. Most office buildings, bedrooms, anything, living rooms, 54 feet is an extraordinary jump. So, and I'm hearing from fellow athletes, teammates, is that he's a good guy too.
Yeah.
A lot of the athletes really like him. So you always want to root more for those folks that you hear these good things about too. And then Kyle King, real young runner for UVA, runs an 8:14 PR at 3,000 down there at Tyson, and then Vanessa Fabrizio at 2:09 the 800. So good outings for them. And then we go cross country out to the Husky Invitational, and Mark Amaral, he buried Chris Hurt's longtime record in the 3,000 with a 7:54. Chris Hurt was, having been involved with the sport in this town for almost 35 years now, as an old guy, I knew all of these records that are being broken. Keith Witherspoon with the triple jump a few weeks ago. Now Chris Hurt, I remember these guys. And Chris Hurt was a transfer in from Wisconsin. Mm. And he was he's one of the fastest 5,000-meter guys in the NCAA. 13:20 type time, 13:25, 13:30 in there somewhere. Just tremendous runner. And to break one of his records, when I hear his name and someone breaking his record, I'm like, wow, that's impressive. And then Morgan Gay, the speedy 800-meter runner, has moved up to the mile. She came within an eyelash, 6/100ths of a second, Mike, of breaking Jill Hallworth's 30-year record in the indoor mile. She ran 4:34.38. And I remember Jill, sweet as can be Jill. She was back in the early 80s on that undefeated the greatest cross-country team in American history, pretty much female cross-country team. They went undefeated over a two-year period.
Wow.
Jill was an All-American, like I said, sweet as can be, just one of these really gracious, modest, hardworking runners. And her record, it could be going down. It sure came close here with Morgan Gay, so congrats to her. And then kind of a neat story. I was teasing that Anthony Kostelec, our local lad, came out of the Albemarle stable there at a Buzz Males grand gang there. He's one of the Fab Four. He's in his second year at the university, and he's doing good. I mean, he's definitely ACC champion last year as a freshman, blah, blah, blah. And it's blah, blah, blah sounds disrespectful, but it's right. like Anthony just keeps on churning out the hits. Well, he breaks his wrist about a week and a half ago, and he's in this plaster, old-fashioned plaster cast. Definitely a handicap. Come on. So I think he begs coach, can I do, Pete, can I please run the mile? Can I go out to Husky Invitational? It's a big deal. So out he goes. He runs, his PR is 405. He runs a 402. It has to be some kind of record for a guy with a cast to run a mile. You know, it'd be kind of cool. Guinness Book of World Records.
casted
milers. Anthony Kostolik up at the top there. But
kid has got the wind in there. Give him a little speed. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you don't want to be standing too close to him as he's swinging his arms. So Anthony headed for that sub-4 mile. I'm not jinxing it by any means to say that. It's coming. I don't know when, but it's definitely coming. Patrick Todd, his teammate, was just a couple of ticks ahead of him, also at 4:02, about a couple hundredths of a second ahead of him. So great job there. Again, all the way around, great weekend. Hats off to the assistants, Mike Eskin, who coaches the Rocket, Marcus Robinson, and Todd Morgan, Pete Watson, and Julie Stackhouse, backing up Coach Fetzer here. So ACCs are next weekend, not this coming weekend, but next weekend. I believe they're ACC indoors. God, I can't remember now where I read they're at. I think Clemson, but that's the weekend of the 23rd, 24th, 25th ACC indoors. The Valentine's run was really great. We had, like I said, a record field out there. Schultzel Track Club helps organize this for the Amnesty International folks. Carol Finch and company, guys like Dave Murphy, John Lloyd out there making sure we have a well-organized event. It's a hilly,
it is.
Hilly son of a gun of a course. You never really can relax. I had to wheel it ahead of time and then mark it. And I'm huffing and puffing just thinking, when the heck does anyone ever settle in this course? And what I mean settle is gets into some kind of groove. So you have a gentle downhill at the start and then a steeper downhill. You go around these traffic circles.
Yeah.
It's beautiful out there. Do not get me wrong. I'm not dissing Old Trail. But the neighborhood out there is built on a series of hills. It's like a little mini kind of San Francisco out there. Rolls all the way through. So you got long uphill, long downhill. And then to add to the whole challenge, you go off onto a trail for the a full mile on the trail. No ifs, ands, or buts. I wheeled it. It's about 0.97, not 0.97 of a mile, 97% of a mile. It's right there. So it's tough. Steep hills, short hills on this gravel. There are some downhills, but when they're that steep and then they make an abrupt right 90-degree angle at the bottom of the hill onto a little narrow wooden bridge, and it was in the low 30s, and it's got a little moisture on it, you're like, is that ice on there?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I remember running it a few years ago, and I was definitely huffing and puffing a little more than I have in some other 5Ks. It was challenging.
Well, I get a little, as a coach and as a race director, I'm not the director of this event, but I definitely help with it quite a bit and read the miles split off. I get a little frustrated. I said to someone this morning, they're kind of getting down on their time, and I said, listen.
Right.
You want a PR, you got to run on a PR course. Now, if you're a new runner and your first race was 2 weeks ago and you ran some hilly course then and your second race is on another hilly course, you're probably going to run a PR. But if you've been racing for years,
sure,
you cannot. You've got to grade it on a curve. And this is kind of a little sidelight tip to the mental end of racing and enjoying it. Is that I go for course PRs. So when I was racing a lot, I knew certain courses, particularly the track, were going to be conducive for me running my best time of my life. But all the rest of the courses, the 10-miler course, some of the harder 5K courses in town, I called them course PRs. I wanted to see what I could do from year to year. So if you and Jess go back out and run the Valentine's run as a married couple next year, you as an improved runner would expect to run faster. But if you had just recently run 5K on the track and blitzed out the best time of your life, you can't then go to it's a tactical course and just figuring it all out. And you say, oh, Mark, I don't know what's wrong with the training or what's happening. I'm getting out of shape. I about want to scream because, I want to see people enjoy the sport. And it gets a little weird sometimes how much people are PR happy. It's a good thing to want to shoot for your best. But you have to, if a professor gives the hardest exam of the year and you always get hundreds, but this guy says no one's going to get 100 and you don't get 100, you get a 97. You're, oh, my gosh, I've gotten so stupid. How weird does that sound?
Right.
You get the highest grade in the class by 5 points. So the other thing I like people to do is look to the people that are normally ahead of them. So when I was racing, again, this is a tip. So if Mike, you know, Biseglia was always ahead of me by 30 seconds. And we get on a hard course. And he's still only ahead of me by 30 seconds or even 25 or even 20. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Even though I might not have run a great time, great on a curve.
Yeah, and I know this is obviously two different sports, but in a lot of ways, in my mind, I see similarities here as somebody that's getting new into golf. When you first start to play golf, your scores are going to jump up big time as you get better and you improve. But if you go from one, if you've been, you know, playing golf for 4 or 5 years and you go from one course to another, you're playing, you know, a local course, then you're at Pebble Beach, your score is not going to be as good. You know, sometimes there is something to that.
You got to enjoy your sport as much as you possibly can. And it's not a trick. Anything you can do that leads you to that enjoyment. And so grading each course on a curve, weather. Sometimes it's hot as blazing. People say, I didn't run that well today. Of course you didn't. I mean, there has to be some handicap to it. And I'm also reminded of Andrea Wright, one of my favorite all-time athletes I've ever coached, who says to me from time to time, and it's a beautiful quote, and this is, again, this applies to someone who's been racing for years, not a new person at 51 that is improving. They've never raced before, and at 51, they start nailing things. 5 years later, they're still running PRs. Talking about someone who's like Andrea. She started being pretty competitive in her late 30s. She raced all the way through her 40s. She's now 50. She said, it's a great quote. She goes, I have to train harder as I'm getting older. I have to train harder every year to stay the same as the previous year.
Hmm.
Whereas a newer runner, somebody like you, you're newer to the sport, certainly newer to racing.
Yeah.
You can train at the same level each year and just keep getting faster as a natural improvement.
Right.
But at some point when you level off, you come to me, Mark, I'm not improving anymore. Mike, now you're going to have to work harder.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, it was a great day out there. Speaking of Andrea Wright, she and Hernan Garbini took down the 50 to 59 age group record on the course. They sent the new course benchmarks, Andrea 2018, Hernan 1803. Very impressive for any age, but certainly 50-year-olds. Louise Knutson and Seth Hutchinson, they were the couple of the day, the male-female couple of the day. He finished first overall. She finished first overall. So guess what? They won their division. The divisions were male-male. There were 12 teams. Female-female, the big one, 38 teams. Parent-child, 20 teams. Male-female, which would be Seth and Louise, 30 teams. Husband-wife, 28 teams. Good to see the spouses out there. That'll be you next year, Mike. And then siblings, you know, brother, sister, sister, sister. Brother, siblings, there were four teams. So that was our smallest group. And Seth and Louise both set the course record, new course record, Louise 1846, which buried the old mark by 38 seconds. And then Seth, 1 second, 1 second faster than the old mark, 1536. Just a little over 5 minute pace. Smoking. Team champions, of course, Seth and Louise were the blue ribbon winners in their division. Meg Crook, who had a superior race in 1953, she was second female in a very uber competitive female field this year. I'll talk about that in a second. And her teammate, Jen Hochrein, they were first in the female. Jennifer, sixth overall, she runs 20:50-something, sixth overall, beating herself up, didn't have a great day, didn't feel great over the last couple of miles. And you say, I know, Jen, you know, you have these days. But I said, Jennifer, you realize that you would have won last year's race by about 35 seconds.
Wow.
So you're sixth this year. That's how competitive it was.
Exactly.
In the male-male, Carl Bruggeman and Mark Dempsey, Jim and Alex Levine, parent-child, both had good races. Andrew and Bridget Parkins, husband-wife, and Michael and Tasha Nesevich were the siblings. A couple of stats here. In last year, five people broke 20 minutes. This year, 13 people broke that kind of superior elite mark. 13. It's almost triple. Now, I know the race is bigger, but races get bigger, and the quality of the field doesn't change quite often.
Right.
Women's four-miler, perfect example. I mean, the quality of the field hasn't necessarily changed. And when I say quality, that sounds weird, but the average time, the speed, it hasn't
not
changed
what you mean,
a ton
yeah.
over the last 4 or 5 years as the race has grown tremendously. Here, the quality changed, the average time, winning time, everything just exploded this year. I don't know what's going on. In 2012, 13, excuse me, last year, nine people broke 21 minutes. This year, 20.
Wow.
So over double. Yeah, pretty impressive. Let's see, some call-outs to some great improvement for folks. Some of them are my own people in the 10-mile training program. I'm always proud to brag about my athletes because I am proud of them. Mandy Strawn, she ran 40-20 at the New Year's Day race just 6 weeks ago. She's in program one of the 10-miler. 40-20, pretty good time for a novice. On a much harder course, 6 weeks later, she runs 37-20. Picks up
very good.
Three solid minutes. Bert Harold, he was 26-15 at New Year's. He's 25-04 on this one. That's getting pretty doggone competitive. And then I don't know how to pronounce this. X-U-A-N, Zon Quinn, Q-I-M, 35-10 at the New Year's and 30-38
wow.
at the Valentine's. Wow, that's an improvement. So congrats to all of those folks. Leah Connor, a big jump from New Year's, 23-09 down to 22-49. She's a veteran, so that was a nice little jump for her. Annie Chapin, one of my favorites, she was a 25-01. She's getting so doggone close to breaking that 8-minute barrier. She was 8:05 pace. Nice improvement from last year, about 35 seconds. Chloe Ball, gosh, she's doing so great, 28-34, 9:13 pace. Chloe, that is just really getting good, particularly on such a tough course. And Bill Balky, one of my favorites, starting the men's 4-miler training program. Classic, coming off the couch, sedentary guy, has his really fast wife, and Bill says, okay, I need to get out there. Getting up in my late 40s, early 50s, I need to start doing something here. And good Bill is just chugging along and had a great race out there, 11:09 pace, which is just excellent for a guy whose body type is saying, you know, couch is probably a little more comfortable place. This guy is working and losing weight and looking great. Really good out there. So congrats to him and all everybody else that was out there. It was fun. We've got pictures on our Facebook. I know Scott Smith was out there taking photos too. I suspect they're out there somewhere. Really, really fun day and perfect weather, by the way, for racing. The run for home is coming up on the 25th, near and dear to my heart because I'm very actively involved. Over the years with the Haven, I'm not as involved as I used to be. I was feeling a little guilty about that. I promised to put on a run for him, so that's what I'm doing next week. Gabe Ophish is helping out. Young Gabe, it's awesome. He's been really helped me a ton. And it's set for the 25th downtown course. So yet again, another kind of roller coaster of a course, but beautiful. We haven't had a downtown race in a while. So you go to the Haven website, you can go to our website, I go to the Track Club website if you want to enter that event. And all the dollars, all of it, 100% benefit our homeless neighbors. Fastest kid in the Ville, Brian Fetzer's been talking about this a little bit. Who is the fastest 8-year-old? Who's the fastest 9-year-old? I mean, it's always been the cool thing. Fastest man in the world is, of course, who? Right. The guy who wins the gold medal at the Olympics in the 100. It's the shortest sprint in the Olympics. So Brian's talking about a 40 or 50-meter dash and cooking this up. So we're starting kind of getting the word out about it, and that'll be in May. Who truly is the fastest kid in town? Obviously, you know, not everybody gets to a race on any given day, but hey, yeah. At that given moment, I mean, there could be someone out there in the backwoods somewhere that has never laced on a pair of running shoes that's the fastest guy in the world. But in the Olympics, 100 meters, On that given day, we always call it the fastest. I want to talk real briefly about, well, maybe not so briefly, about giving a tip here on racing. And this reminded me, actually, as this woman came in and talked to me on Monday, of myself. See if you can relate to this, Mike. See if anybody listening can relate to this. She comes in, she goes, I want to get a new pair of shoes. My calves are killing me. And so I said, okay, well, let's find out. Usually calves killing you isn't necessarily new pair of shoes, particularly both calves. That's usually mistaken training.
And she had the shoes for a while, the ones she's been
She with? Hadn't. She had just gotten them a couple months ago.
Okay.
And we talked for a few seconds, and I started to kind of unravel the mystery. And so she says, it only happens when I race. Okay. Hmm. I said, well, you know, it doesn't happen in your training, but only happens when you race. Probably not the shoes. Let's talk about that. How long have you been running? About 5 months. How many races have you done? 3. She goes, this Valentine's was the worst. And I said, okay, tell me about the race itself. She says, well, I'm training with my friends, so I was trying to keep up with them. And I said, well, tell me what you hit the mile mark in. So I don't know. I had my headphones, which is a new phenomenon. In the old days, you would never have music on in a race. You got enough stimulation as it is, but now a lot of people wear their headphones. Not going to preach about it, but it does lead to one classic thing. She didn't hear me, Mr. Volunteer, out there freezing my backside off because it was cold. Nice for the runners, not so great for the volunteers. Been out there for an hour and a half marking the course and then reading off a split. She didn't even see me, didn't see the mile mark. She thinks, she did see the mile mark. It was somewhere around low tens. I said, okay, good. We got at least a mark. So
yeah,
low tens. What did you end up averaging? She averaged about mid-11s by the end of the game.
Mm.
Here's what happened. Cavs started tightening up. She starts breathing heavy. She said, I could hear my breathing pretty much from the half-mile mark. She gets a side ache, a stitch, a cramp. She suffers greatly over the last 2 miles of the race, greatly, in a lot of pain, going slower and slower with each step. Turns out she went out the first half mile under 5 minutes, which is under 10-minute pace. She is not a 10-minute pace person, so she went out faster than what she's capable of. That's going to tighten up the calves. The breathing hard is an indication you're running faster than what you're capable of. This has happened to me before, not the tight calves in a race, but the breathing hard and going out too quickly, the side ache, and then falling apart of the last mile. But here's the icing, the straw on the camel's back, so to speak. Here's the thing that just blew the house over. She didn't warm up at all. She gets out of the car, gets her race number, pins it on, walks over the starting line, boom. She lines up, very rookie-like, somewhere in the middle to the middle of the front. Mistakes are being made all over the place here. She then decides, because she trains with these women, I'm going to race with them. That on the surface seems to be a totally innocent thing. But at this point, they're probably a little faster than there. She tries to keep up with them, and now it unravels. The calves tighten up because she's not warmed up. She no dynamic stretching, nothing. So I said to her, you remind me of me when I started out. And I said, you know, people say quite often good coaches are the ones that, you know, were bumbling idiots themselves in making mistakes, and I made a lot of them. She wasn't a bumbling idiot. She'll be a bumbling idiot if she continues to make this mistake again and again. She's not a bumbling idiot for doing it. Because, come on. First, it's a race. Yeah. She's looking around everyone else. I'm going to go out hard. Aren't you supposed to breathe heavy? Aren't you supposed to have a side ache? No. You breathe heavy over the last quarter mile maybe as you're really pushing it. So here's the unraveler situation, and I held her hand, walked through the whole thing with her. Get there early. Her long run's 6 miles. She's training for a 10K. In fact, she goes, I'm really here also to get some advice because I don't want this to happen. I don't want to have the same experience as the 10-miler.
Yeah.
I mean, at the 10K in Richmond.
Yeah.
I said, this is what I said to her. Very fresh of me, but I really wanted to drive this point home. I said, you will not have the same experience at the 10K. It'll be worse, much worse, because it's 6 miles instead of three.
Right.
Okay, so unravel. Let's go back to the start. Walked her through it. Get the early warm up, a light jog. If your long run 6 miles and you're running a 3 mile race, you can handle a half mile or a mile warm up. Then do some dynamic stretching, some skipping, some hopping, some backwards running, some jumping jacks, whatever. Get those calves really heated up. Then, here was the key phrase, line up in the back. Said, sorry, kiddo, you're a new runner, you're inexperienced. She said, it was so humiliating to get passed by people almost the entire way from half mile on. I said, of course, you went out faster than what you're capable of, you're going to get passed the whole way. Line up in the back, and you pass people the whole way.
Mm.
She goes, bah, bah, bah. I said, no, I don't want to hear it. Line up towards the back. Now, in a huge race, you might not want to be in the back row, but a race with 300 people in, she'll work her way through that field no problem, without any kind of, you know, congestion. I said, what'll happen now is you'll go out at a pace that's slower than what you're capable of. It'll allow you to warm up, because I argue all the time, the first half mile of a foot race is an extension of the warm-up.
Right.
If you call it the first half mile of the race, you're going to get into that psyche of saying, I got to race it. And what happens is, more times than not, someone shooting for an 8-minute pace in the race goes through the half mile mark. And we have, our Schultzville Checkup races have half mile split. It's not being read, but I marked it. I put a sign up. You've probably seen it, Mike, before.
Yeah, sure.
That was my creation many years ago. In fact, some races I have a quarter mile mark, which really helps people. Now, of course, with Garmin's, you don't need it as much.
Right.
But if you don't have a Garmin, so if you're shooting for 8-minute pace, what should be your half mile split, Mike? Unless it's all downhill, let's call an ordinary start. Half mile, what should it be?
8-minute pace, first half mile.
Remember, an extension of your
warm-up. 9-ish? 9? Maybe 40?
Well, 940 pace, no.
840.
No, a little slow. Maybe 410.
Right.
415.
I was 410
to 415.
It up, yeah.
So maybe 820 pace to 830 pace. Maybe even a little slower.
Yeah.
You almost can't screw this up by going too slow.
Right.
But you can screw it up by going too fast.
When I said 9, I meant it as if divided by 2.
Saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, and it's hard to do. I get it. I hear it all the time. But Mark, it's so hard. It's so hard. It is hard. I know it. So what's a helpful tip? I think personally it helps me when I do race anymore because I'm nowhere near as fast as I used to be. I still have competitive urges, but I line up towards the back. If
right.
you line up towards the back, most likely you're not going to dart out too fast. Why? People are in the way, and the people around you are running slower.
Exactly.
So you don't get sucked out. She was lining up with the 7 and 8 and 9 minute people.
Yeah,
she had no business being up there. And, oh, Mark, that's insulting. It is not insulting. I am telling you the facts of life. You should not, you and I do not jump into the Grand Prix of auto racing.
Right.
When we are the best driving we've done speed-wise is, I-64 heading to Richmond.
Right.
Going 80 miles an hour. We know what the heck we're doing. And it's even hits more at home with, if you play golf with Tiger Woods, okay, you could keep up. You would have no, you could golf right alongside of him. Your shot, it would take you longer to walk up, but you wouldn't feel dead.
Right.
You run, and you run with Tiger Woods. When the Tiger Woods are running, you're going to get knocked back.
Yeah.
And I see one of my roles as a coach is to try and create a competitive as a scenario as possible for my athletes, but realistic and comfortable. Do I want my athletes to hurt? Of course. Do I want them to try? Yes. But if you go out at a pace that's faster than what you're capable of handling for the race, I wash my hands of it. I can't be out there to hold your hand. So, and I don't coach this woman, but it was really, we had a great interaction, and I think she very quickly saw that somebody was looking out for her. She kept saying thanks for these tips, and I realized I got to put this on Runcast this week because I get in my head that everyone should know this, but they don't. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, a little bit of an offshoot lecture here, but hopefully that's helpful for everybody, even experienced racers. And we did the same thing this morning in our workout, Wednesday morning. Everybody had a workout. Everybody had different kinds of workouts this morning. Everybody was told, make your first couple of repeats. So if you're doing 12 by 400, the first two or three years slowest.
Right.
You see warm up. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening in, and we'll stay on your feet, and we'll talk to you next week.
This week's edition of Runcast was brought to you by the Ragged Mountain Running Shop, Central Virginia's community running and walking family partner since 1982. Conveniently located on the historic UVA corner with free parking at their doorstop. Visit them online at raggedmountainrunning.com or make sure you friend them on Facebook, Ragged Mountain Running Shop.